Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Lauren Wolf, guest host of Prosody, and my guest today is the poet Jill Corey. Jill Corey is interested in the intersection of poetry, visual art, representations of gender, and disability. She holds an MFA from The Ohio State University. Her poems have appeared or are forthcoming in numerous journals, including Arsenic Lobster, Copper Nickel, Interrupture, and Portland Review. She edits Rogue Agent, a journal of embodied poetry and art. Her chapbook, Borrowed Bodies, was released from Pudding House Press in 2009. Her first full-length collection, Suits for the Modern Dancer, is forthcoming from Sundress Publications. You can find her at jillcorey.com. Hi, Jill. Welcome to Prosody.
Hey, Lauren. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you.
Thank you.
Can you begin by reading us some poems?
Sure. This is Insect Corollary. In overview, your body's an almond shape. Exoskeleton, the dense mud green of the swamps. I approximate you, hidden sheath wing. I, too, consume dead prey, shun frigid regions. In you, I see me, primeval. Stomach, just a wide place in the pharynx. Each lung, a muscular hole. One tube for vein, for artery, for heart. But your eyes are many. This is 39 Ways to Disappear. So I should just preface this by saying, you know how Facebook puts up those funny little ads sometimes? I got this ad once and it said, women die alone doing this one weird thing. And I thought that was so ridiculous. So I had to write a poem about it. It's called 39 Ways to Disappear. Women die alone in cardboard boxes. Women die alone gardening, caressing herb rub into the lamb. Because of how the house bumped and wailed during a storm. Because beneath the Japanese plum tree, surrounded by vertebrae, inhaling engine smoke, along the edge of the wharf, in the thoughts of scoundrels, atop the roof with a drink on the side table, orbiting the moon, from psychological violence, women die alone, drawn close to the heater vent. She was found dead, surrounded by the shell of a gun fetish, pondering the recoil, having swallowed a battery, clutching her book bag, aside Jenny at the store, in the basement of a skyscraper, by a next-door farmer, from debt, aboard an aircraft, after hanging in a gray suit with pale blue pinstripes because of microchips. She was found dead with a plate of bread and sweet tea. I will be found in a lunar lander by a vegetable vendor, having swallowed my tongue with all the nodes of my insomnia. Despite the humidity, with my orbital bone smashed in over his absence, with my mouth full of cake, inside a cute dress, following a vein no one knew about, surrounded by wool carpet, in the hall, my body fast letting go of warmth. A lot of my work does, in fact, explore disability and the nature of being mostly visually impaired, legally blind. This is for a little girl who is, I call her my heart niece. She is my adopted niece. Her name is Priyasha. This is called Saltation with Cain. When I hold her, she points to the ways I am different from mommy. Fingers my pink hair, nose ring, while her mother murmurs, gentle. I let her hands traverse my face, probe my mouth. Attest to silent cities within. I say, ma, ma, ma. She points to chipped black toenail polish, skims the lines of my tattoos. Stealth, Hosanna, to the witches. We walk along Carson to the car. She leans out to trail a brick wall's texture, tracing lines of mortar. Her mother says, brick. She says, brick. Thinnest, channels, coastline, shoals. Now she wants down. She has her eye on my cane, tries to wrest it from me with both hands. Instinct, enchant, elation. I say, white cane. She says, white cane, runs her palm up the side like me when I first felt its smoothness, fiberglass telescoping. Alone, canal to ocean, locate the lowest halo. She wants to walk, to spin, so we do, awkwardly, and then twirl around like a maypole. Nascent, action, anoint, atone. I hold up high and she holds low. She is joyous. I am circumscribed. Wince, silent, tithe. I try to keep the tip solid on the sidewalk so she won't slip. Lento, 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 lento. Her feet follow their own rhythm. I try my best to be the wheel of the gyroscope. Leash, lean, twist. I chant spin, spin. I don't care who sees. Perhaps paradoxically, because of my blindness, I'm also very much interested in visual art, and I'm actually writing a chapbook of ekphrastics, and here's one. After Edward Munch's Melancholy. Skinflint, he raises a house from the sand so he can always be near her. He is no architect. He is all foundering toeholds. The house assembles itself from desperation. He lays down in a bare room, the skin of his back a sandpaper tablet. At night, pain wakes him from fingers to toe tips. Under him, the foundation slips. The tide sucks his joints from their sockets. The only relief is to walk. He scans his horizon for a prediction. Every step towards the shoreline erodes him. Dawn dazzles, dropping veils that stall his velocity. Her facsimile in a tide pool, milky profile, sullen mouth. The visitation deepens, widens, her body amphibian. Slipknots, twosomes, foursomes. Her bohemian amusement, eyes scrying. When he kneels to touch her, she pulls away. Laughter, slaughter.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Jill Corey. Jill, there's so many things that I love about your work, in particular, just the musicality, how you're able to come up with these lush verbs and this sort of whirling consonants that happens in your work. Is that something that happens in revision, or are you conscious of that as you're drafting?
I would say a little bit of both. Sometimes I kind of just get on a roll sound-wise. Like, I'll start hearing, like, vowel sounds over and over in my head, and sometimes I'll make lists of words that have similar vowel sounds and try to work them in. So it's a, I don't know, I'm really into the way letters taste.
Yeah, that's interesting. Can you feel like you physically taste them?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's a lovely experience, actually. Mm-hmm. It's like bodily.
Do you feel like that connects a little bit to your disability, like a heightened sense of sound that you might have?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I just pay attention more to it. I think that so for longer poems or prose, sometimes I'll use a screen reader. And for example, I used a screen reader to read The Wasteland when I was in graduate school, because it was like my first graduate school assignment was read The Wasteland. And it was, I was like, holy smokes, yeah, this is large. And so it's funny hearing this like halfway evolved computer voice try to parse things, but you kind of get an idea of what it's like to hear something. And so lots of times, even if it's a weird computer voice, you know, I think about hearing.
Yeah, that's interesting. Are there particular poets that you feel you're drawn to because of their use of sound?
That is a really good question. I think that maybe in recent years, I've started to read more poets who take bigger leaps in their work and make the reader go with them logically. I'm thinking of Hua Wen right now. She sort of, I just look at her poems and they look like collages of sound sometimes. And that kind of just opened my brain into a new way of thinking and writing.
That's interesting.
Thank you.
And I'm also interested in this sort of ekphrastic project you said you were working on. What draws you to a piece of art? How do you know you want to write a poem about it, or what springs from looking at it? I'm always interested in ekphrastics because it makes no sense to me. Like, I could never write a poem based on a piece of art. So I'm interested when people feel this connection. Mm-hmm. What happens when you look at that and then want to write about it?
Right, because I think you can totally appreciate art but not necessarily want to write about it. And mm-hmm. I also used to be sort of, confused, maybe turned off by the concept because it seemed really overwhelming until it happened to me. Actually, that poem that I read, Edward Monk's Melancholy, I had the image on my wall for like a really long time. And I just saw it every day, and the man's face, I don't know. I feel like it is sort of a synesthetic experience that happens. I don't feel that way with all art.
So did you just feel like, oh, I'm going to start with the image, maybe describe it a little bit and then see where it takes me? Is that how it works?
It's funny because I don't know what the rules are.
No, I don't think there are.
Like, I don't, like, I'm so poorly read in them. I don't know. Like, I've never taken a class. I have no idea. So I actually like to sort of imagine that I'm entering the art, either as, like, the speaker, like, I have just stepped into this, or as the person, if there's a person in it, kind of imagining. And I tend to like more surreal, strange artwork. So,
well, that makes sense. I think when you're doing ekphrastics, it varies for each writer. You're gonna approach it in a different way. I think that inspiration from art is fascinating. Can you read some more poems?
Sure. Well, since we're talking about ekphrastics, one I have on the top of the pile here is another Edvard Munch. And this one I wrote in the style of a haibun, which is a Japanese form where you write a prose poem and then kind of a little haiku at the end to sort of sum up or open out. After Edvard Munch's Anxiety. Drunk panorama hems in a crowd. Cattle car press, methodical terror horde. Boats in the harbor float serene, even though the hills lash the sky. These people are all dying from miasma or some divine crush. Just don't know when. Must he stand so close? Left foot, right foot, pitch and yaw. A gas mask will not keep her safe here. Too much startlement maxes out the reflex. Sounds of souls scraping the pavement itches the eardrums, induces a twitch. Occasional stridor erupts from her throat. Submission will not keep him safe here. The hills lash the boiling sky. Their tilts and lilts oppose one another. Teeth chatter like an unsteady teacup, saucer eyes and pinned pupils. Everyone's got a tremor. they may experience anaphylaxis. The procession will last indefinitely. In a blur, her hands attack her stifling collar, find no remedy. I'm also, this is from another project that I'm working on. Yeah, I have a few. They just keep sprouting. This one is dealing with two characters who have met each other in a psychiatric ward. And one of them is named Lisa, and one of them is named Nixie. This poem, I'm going to read this little pair of poems that go back and forth between them. The first one is called Trilophon, and it's about Lisa. So, Trilophon. By the time the drug is done with Lisa, it has swelled her into woman, dismayed her with thick thighs, hips, and breasts, jacked all the hormones into scatterplot shrapnel. All the docs line up to lick her chart for luck. An outlier, she spends long hours lying and eating, attends the change of cloud formations behind her eyelids, then dines on leeches, holds her hand under the tap until she forms an envelope of scald. Trilophon adores her body, a fat little cumulus that will sit still while the docs pick her mind like a bird grubs meat from a shell. I guess I should have mentioned this, but Trilophon is actually an older antipsychotic drug, one of the ones that's known for sort of making people somewhat zombified. This next one is called Soul, and it's a conversation between the two girls. Nixie says to Lisa, "It's a crow in a plastic bag you hold by the edges, holy rag pulled into cartoon gape masks. I need a blade to excise it, chalk atoms in the chalk outline, tongue of gargoyle draped between tusk-like fangs. Sour women, wimples, and sweaters peck about this, you're immortal, and that. Thrill, crush, kiss, what high school girls write in journals." Lisa says to Nixie, "A fish sells it to become a girl. Suck, warp, spill, grind down like a salt mill, so it is mineral. Some families have resigned from it." Nixie says to Lisa, "I saw on TV that when you're praying, this area of the brain lights up." She waves her hand to mime a twisting channel. Lisa says to Nixie, "Oh Lord, I don't know." Their sandaled feet slap August asphalt. A piece of quartz lodged in the sidewalk catches the light. Impulsively, they argue. Nixie says to Lisa, "Is this some kind of test? I won't give up pills if that's what you're asking."
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Jill Corey. So Jill, I'm interested in this little project you have between these two girls. Do you ever write in prose?
In prose, like prose poems,
like short stories,
narratives. Oh my goodness, that's too many words. I think my brain just doesn't work that way. I wish it did work that way, because that would be exciting.
Because I'm interested in this idea of like putting this longer narrative between mm-hmm. these two girls, it's sort of like a story, into a poetic format. So it's just easier for you to work in poetic format, or
yeah, I did a lot. I did some creative nonfiction in graduate school, and I really enjoyed lyric essays because you could essentially write poems right. in prose. But I tended to get lost with the other stuff. It was really, really, really hard to just manage mm-hmm. all of that content. I am rather the person who will fixate on three words for, you know, an hour.
That's cool. So when you're dealing with sort of this story taking place in this psychiatric ward, then do you find that you have to do lots of research as you're writing these types of poems?
I would say I had to do some research. The internet is a wonderful thing.
So what kind of things do you think on the internet inspire you then to go and write poems? In the beginning, you said you had like this ad that came up on Facebook. So it seems like these odd, quirky things stick out to you. And then you're like, I'm going to go write a poem about this.
Well, yeah, so I'm a total introvert and, you know, the internet is very good or bad to me in serving my introverted needs. So, yeah, it's amazing how you can leap from like email to Facebook to Wikipedia to go Google something and you just realized you've taken a random mental walk and it's 2 hours later. And then, I don't know, I'll remember something maybe the next day and say, no, I want to go back and try to find that again.
That's cool. What is sort of your process like writing? Do you take notes? Do you write line by line? Do you revise a lot? I'm always interested in asking writers about, you know, their revision process.
I do a lot of revision. That said, most of my first drafts come out pretty realized in the first draft sense, meaning like it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It might not stay that way, but I think I tend to overwrite like rather than underwrite because I just feel like get it on the page and mess around with it later.
Are you initially drafting with an image in mind or a sound or a concept or does it just depend?
I think it depends. Like, for example, so last year we had this really cold, wet winter. Or no, I'm sorry, cold, wet spring. And it was kind of ridiculous. And I have fibromyalgia and the cold, wet weather. Let's just say I'm never going to be able to move to Portland, even though I really want to. It's not for me. So there was this cold, wet time. And I just remember... my husband had the Weather Channel on, and I would just watch weather map after weather map after weather map, and it would show the same thing, the same thing, the same thing. So, yeah, I guess a lot of devices with screens that have stuff on them show me things that then go into poems.
The Weather Channel is rather inspiring, though.
It is.
It's like the strangest weather on Earth. Oh, it's very fascinating stuff. It is. Can you read some more poems?
Sure. In fact, I'll read the one that I was talking about right now, regarding the weather map. This is called Spinal. Seasons delayed. I find an ache in the data. The forecast cascades from all my devices, updated every minute. In which nerve bundle does the pain rest? I'll not lie to you, TV meteorologist. I want to set a match to it. Wildfire to dry us out, while lake effect rain tethers me to the couch, swirls on your green screen. Pollution of color ache, pattern babble deluge from your mouth. You identify global trends, a twinge in the invisible wound. Nerve center is what you call your weather war room. All my effort goes to turning my head. Uproar in the ear. Long spines cover your map. You can't say when it will clear. So the project that I'm referring to rather mysteriously about the two girls, it actually, there's five women in it. It's a pretty large project. And it explores how these women perform their gender, I guess, being a woman, when there is an ill body in some way, like a sick body in some way. This poem here comes at the end of the book. It's called Collected Works. Our bodies, tables of translucent skin on which is inscribed a topographical depiction. Through the glass-topped display, a magnifier invites you to peek. Spidery capillaries indicate service roads that trail off, no access. But further south, they branch into rural routes, then avenues and highways, clusters of bruise-colored towns. Our brains, electronically weighed and sliced, portioned, pixelated for posterity, research efforts. To be located, an aberration, a mass, a manse, a monster. Spirit corral, CR, idea cage, idiot cage, projected. A portrait of the artist in her blue period. Our blood, encapsulated in child-sized vials, stories buried deep. The scientists will awaken their centrifuges, read stains through special lenses. For a modest fee, you can put your eye to the scope, walk our many alcoves, peruse the shelves, ambiently lit.
So Jill, I'm really fascinated with sort of like the tangible, concrete things in your poems. Can you talk a little bit about the images you use, why you're drawn to those?
The images, well, let's see. Some of them come from sounds, actually. So strings of images will maybe seem unlikely, but end up going together. Mm-hmm. And in my sort of my spare time, what I do for relaxation, I am a mixed media artist. So I play with paint and glue and paper and stuff. So I really just like stuff piled on top of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where the piles of images come from. I'm like, I need one. No, I need another one. No, I need still another one on top of that. Yeah.
And then how do you trust those leaps? Is it just sort of instinctual, or are you just like...
That is a fabulous question, because I'm still trying to figure out that. I think that is different for every poem. Sometimes I'll feel pretty solid, like, yeah, this one, I think the reader can handle this. And sometimes, you know, and that's where I go to my community of readers. I'll hand it, readers meaning my, right, like, workshoppers, people I send poems to, and we critique each other, and I'll be like, you know, what can you handle this leap? How do you, or is this ridiculous what I'm doing here? So sometimes it's a pretty fine line between, mm-hmm, this works and this is ridiculous. So
exactly. Yeah. Leaping is tough because, you know, you have to get to that place where you feel comfortable in your own writing to start making leaps. And then you're like, should I trust this leap? It's great. Can you send us out with a poem?
Of course, that would be lovely. Let's see here. I would love to. This is called Pain Taxonomy. It has an antagonist in it called Dr. Dog. Pain Taxonomy. Dr. Dog says, I need to name names, but some truths are extra dimensional. I have climbed out my tree and now live in the ozone. Got a real barn burner up in my retina. Been ejected from one borderland into another uncertain district. Woke with welts on my thighs in the shape of linden leaves.
The poetry of Jill Corey. Thanks so much for being here, Jill. It was great.
This was a real honor. It was wonderful. Thank you.
So you've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.